We're here at the 2022 PRI show in Indianapolis, and I've got the distinct pleasure to be joined by our good friend, Mr. Mike Copeland. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'm very excited to chat with Mike. Mike and I go back a long time and have had a lot of interesting experiences over the years, but the main focus right now, the hot topic, of course, is the hydrogen-powered vehicles converting traditional gas engines to hydrogen, and you are leading the charge on this.
We are, absolutely.
So last year at the SEMA show, you had the beautiful red, it's a 48
yep.
Chevy pickup truck with an LS3 supercharge engine converted to run on hydrogen.
Correct.
And this year at SEMA, that was out driving around in front of the show.
It was actually racing. We competed in the Optimus series with that truck.
That is too cool.
First time that we know of, and we've done our research, that a hydrogen burning ICE engine vehicle has competed in a race series in North America.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, I believe it. I mean, it's not very, definitely not common.
No, it's just not.
And then you brought another car out this year too.
We did. Yep, we debuted a new car with an advancement of our technology.
And that was a 64?
64.
Ford Falcon.
Yep.
With a Coyote motor?
Gen 3 Coyote. So the latest version of Coyote engine in it.
And again, breathing hydrogen.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is an advancement because that's a direct injected engine instead of port injection like the LS. So we converted the direct injection to hydrogen. And in that specific Coyote series, they also run a port injection. So, and we converted that port injection to water, and that allows us to fine-tune and finite control the burn rate of hydrogen. So we're actually making more power on hydrogen than the engine did on gas, about 10%
more.
10%? 10% more, yeah.
Right. And that, you didn't have to mess with cams and all the rest of it.
We did not change anything in the engine. We opened the crate and used the, you know, as far as internal engine.
Sure.
It's exactly stock, all the camshaft and pistons and gaskets and everything else. We modify the crankcase evaporation system to work to our specifications and our requirements and put the hydrogen controls in it, and the rest is history.
For sure. So obviously in my case, I'm a gas engine guy. I understand and appreciate EVs. I kind of think it'd be better if they were organically developing and maybe not as forced as kind of how I feel they are, but the idea of being able to convert something that already exists to a different fuel like hydrogen and have it be a cleaner burn and make power is just awesome.
You know, when we started down the path with hydrogen and we were making progress and doing all of the analyticals and everything else, it became very obvious that this is a path to the future that I think is better than the alternatives that are out there. And obviously I've made that commitment financially with our engineering resources and the dedication and everything we've done to get to this point.
Well, and I think a lot of people don't take into effect that if you can do a, and I guess you and I've talked before, but ideally someday there's a conversion package kind of thing available in addition to new engines that are already set up. But that's not creating an entirely new thing. So those resources have already been properly used into making something.
Yeah, well, depending on whose numbers you use, there's between 90 million and 290 million gasoline-burning internal combustion vehicles in the United States.
In the U.S. alone.
Yeah. Now, what are we going to do? Throw them all away?
90 to 290 million. And there's, what, 375 million people in the
right.
country?
Yeah. Well, I have 20 cars, so I account for part of it.
Yeah, it's all your fault.
but that's the reality of it is all of that, all of the impact, all of the everything else, the money, all of the things that support it have already been spent to get there, right?
Right.
And if you can do our conversion, and we don't know the numbers yet because there's a savings of scale that we're still working to get to, right? And if you can do our conversion for 15 cents on the dollar or what it's going to cost you to buy a new car.
Done.
Right?
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you?
And then the trickle down to the enthusiast side, like in my world, if I'm able to, you know, drive my 62 Ford that's been converted and be guilt-free environmentally.
Well, and the reality of supply and demand is that as more and more electric vehicles become on the road, there will be less and less demand for gasoline and for diesel and for those products. So the price of those will escalate exponentially. It's not unrealistic to consider that a gallon of gasoline could be $35 or even $50 a gallon. And as there's less demand for it, the gas stations that exist are going to go away, right? So now you may have to go 100 miles to find a gas station. I mean, unfortunately, I'm a big gearhead, right? I mean, I love cars and performance and all of this, right? But the reality of is just what it is. And simple logic says that that's a path that could happen. A lot of people ask about hydrogen and the cost and all the things. It correlates today to about a half of the same amount as gasoline. If California is the only place it's commercially available, gasoline $6 a gallon, hydrogen is about $3.50 a gallon. Okay. The latest infrastructure bill that they passed in Washington includes $7 billion for 8 to 10 hydrogen manufacturing distribution centers across the United States. And the goal of that investment is to reduce the cost of hydrogen by 80%.
Right? And it's already half of gasoline at the consumer level.
Right. So you're talking about hydrogen that today we're getting in round numbers about 16 miles to the gallon. You're taking that number and making it under a dollar a gallon.
All right. But you and I both know that, you know, if they could get if the old adage of, you know, make a car that ran on water would be $10 a gallon, you know.
You know, theoretically, yeah. But, you know, the positives to hydrogen, there's more raw element in the world to make hydrogen than anything else that exists.
Right.
Right. We can make it. It basically is made from water. The moisture in the atmosphere, we can manufacture hydrogen from that.
Yeah.
Okay. We can manufacture on site. We have all of that here in the United States. We'll no longer have to truck hydrogen to take it to the filling centers. They'll make it right at the pump and pressurize it. The station I use in Michigan is owned by the state of Michigan, and I have approval to go there. But they basically have a big tank that they fill with water, and they create an electrolysis. It separates the hydrogen from the oxygen. They pump the oxygen out the window, the hydrogen in the tank next to it, and pressurize it. And that's hooked up pump that I connect to the truck.
And there you go. Really, that's unbelievable.
It takes less than 5 minutes to fill 5.3 kilograms.
Yes, that is super cool. And you know what? That's something I'd never considered is the distribution of this stuff. You know, you hear the people, the naysayers, well, you know, there's no infrastructure for it. But if it's on site, on demand, and I guess a smaller example of that would be like a nitrogen fill station for a tire.
Sure.
You don't buy nitrogen tanks. The machine does it.
Right. Yeah. And we're actually working with some companies and on some technology that in the future, realistically, you'll be able to manufacture hydrogen at home and fill your car right in the driveway.
There you go. So Henry Ford's vision comes true.
Yeah.
Of the homeowner that can, in his case, it was grow the alcohol and feed his machinery.
Sure. Yep.
Did you ever hear that story about Prohibition and Henry Ford?
I did. I'm kind of a little bit of a Henry Ford, you know, aficionado. I love the things he did. And Greenfield Village and the Henry Ford Museum is not that far from me. And I go there sometimes. It's very hard for me to go there because I just get like so intent on something that he did going on there. And I spend hours and my wife like loses her mind. Like, we're here to see the whole thing and you're looking at one display for an hour.
Yeah.
But I love that place. And I love the vision that so many people had in the past. One of the most amazing things to me, they have a train there that was used to haul coal. And they actually disassembled it and moved it there and recreated it inside the museum. Every piece, every nut is a square nut like they used to make way back when, right? This was in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Every steam chamber, everything is studded and double nutted.
Huh.
And there's two of those square nuts locked together. It boggles my mind to think about what it took to do that. So.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about doing things the hard way.
Yeah. So a brief story, and I don't want to take up all your time.
Yeah.
A friend of mine got the job to recreate Henry Ford's 09 race car.
Okay. Nice.
So that was the car that really launched Ford Motor Company.
Yeah.
So they took the original car and completely disassembled it. So I was able to go in and look at every single piece of that car completely disassembled.
That Henry made?
Yeah. And it was a two-cylinder, five-inch stroke, five-inch bore, cast iron piston, cast iron rod, cast iron crank.
Wow.
Inside this cast iron block. The hardest thing that he had to do to recreate it, the gear that was in the crankshaft that drove the cam, was machined into the crank. He could not find anyone with the technology. He finally ultimately found a guy, an old guy that could do it, but it took him months to find somebody that could do what they did in the 1800s.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's impressive. It sounds like a real high RPM machine, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It was total loss oil, where they have a tank they fill with oil and little copper tubes that go down, and you crank each valve to create enough oil drip on the connecting rod and on the cam lobe. And the carburetor was brass plates with holes drilled in them, and the more you stepped on the throttle, the more the holes aligned, and it let more gas fall through it. That little reservoir gas on top of it.
Yeah.
And as the holes lined up, the gas fell through.
It was a gas
sieve. And the engine atomized the fuel and burned it.
That is wild.
It was so impressive to see.
Well, the reason why I brought that up is that there's the story that Prohibition was enacted in the U.S. not because of people getting drunk in bars, but because Henry Ford said a farmer can grow his own fuel with alcohol and power his own and not need anybody else. And the oil side didn't like that. So they outlawed the transportation of alcohol to crush that concept.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have to look that one up.
Look at what Tucker went through.
There's another one. Yeah, yeah. So where are we at today? You know, so you've got a few running vehicles now and you're doing your development. I mean, what's the status of the whole project? And
we're slated to go to the new Detroit SEMA garage, and we're running our emission certification test.
Awesome.
So we're all set up to do that. Bosch, my partner in the development of this program, you know, from their engineering expertise, they're ready, we're ready. And as soon as we have that data and have the proof of what we've already tested and already know, then we're going to submit that to CARB for our for a zero emission EO. And we're on a path. We have some really major things planned for 23. We're going to do some things that people just don't believe is possible. And we're going to do that in 23. And the target, the goal is to be retrofitting fleets, matching fleets of cars, and doing some other components, engines and things like that, delivering those in 24, with a goal to be able to support our industry, the performance industry, sometime in early 25 and start converting cars to hydrogen.
That is too cool. And I love that you're being legit. I just had Ben Kaminsky from the SEMA Detroit Garage as a guest. You know, I've known him for a long time, and that facility is dynamite, and it's that will help forge a path to be able to make a legally sold product.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah that's critical, because there's a lot of us in Detroit, right? A lot of companies like mine that are in Detroit. And it's so expensive to do anyway. And then you add the cost and the travel costs and shipping of vehicles and people and all of the other things associated to go to California to do that. They've worked so hard, SEMA has, to bring in CARB and to work with them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that CARB accepts the results of their facility testing shows you how much work they've done together. You know, Peter and Ben and all of the people that are there, you know, I've obviously worked with them a lot through the years, and even more now, and we're all on that path, right?
Yeah. So now you mentioned, you know, of course, the music to our ears is the performance side, but realistically, you know, you're shooting for mass market for you know, daily drivers or even commercial fleet vehicles. Is that the first step? Or
yeah, it'll be. So this is really expensive to do.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Okay, I mean, I've spent a lot of money and to get where we are. Now we're highly successful to be where we are. I think we're in front of most anybody, right?
Yeah.
But I've spent a lot of money to get here, and in the performance kind of world, almost never are two cars the same.
Right.
Right.
For sure.
So, and that requires, we'll have to spend some time working to more closely bring them together. But if you looked at it from a unique calibration standpoint, compared to, as an example, the 2,000 plus cars I have right now that that municipalities and governments and other people want done, there may be 250 of the exact same calibration, right? So you have to create the savings of scale. The parts that we're using,
sure,
many of them, especially in one-offs, are ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, and that's the same thing, you know, take Chevrolet, for example. They make a billion truck engines so that Corvettes can have an engine.
Right. And you're able to lower the cost because you divide the cost across multiples, right?
Yeah.
Simple math. Divided by five, divided by 5,000.
Right. And at the end of the day, enthusiasts with their weekend cruiser are not the problem.
No. And they're not the problem. They're going to need it, I believe, to deal with the availability and the cost of gasoline and all,
sure,
those other,
yeah,
things.
So right? We can still enjoy them.
Yeah. I mean, I have a four-year-old grandson, right? And as I said, I have 20 cars. And most of them are hot rods, some of some sort. You know, I think I have two that are stock.
Yeah, yeah, right. I would expect.
And that's only because they sit in the driveway all the time.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I want my four-year-old grandson to be able to drive our 72 Chevelle SS. I want,
right,
him to be able to drive that 48 pickup. I want him to be able to drive that Falcon, right? I want him to be able to enjoy that. And I'm afraid if somebody, whether it's me or somebody else, doesn't do something, that won't exist.
Yeah, yeah. And as much as I hate to say it, you know, you're probably right. So I'm just happy that you took up the initiative to try it and stick with it enough and not get pissed off or frustrated and hang it up and see it through as far as you have, for sure.
Yeah. Well, we're not done.
And, no. Yeah. Yeah.
You know. I mean, we're the things that, like what you do. I mean, this is the second time you've had me on to talk about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
People, as a rule, would not understand how important that is, right? I mean, I've been fortunate to get a lot of media. I've done a lot of podcasts. I've done, mm-hmm, last week, I did an interview with Fox News. You know, 11-minute video with Fox News.
Nice.
I mean, I've been able to do a lot of that stuff. That goes so far towards creating the support behind the program, to creating the support and the people that come to me. I mean, I walked into PRI and I'm walking through and people I don't even know are coming up to me and they're like, look, I own this company and we want to support you with whatever you need.
Sure.
So you call me if you need something machined, or you call me if you need a part, or how can we help? I mean, there's so much of that because this is a industry and a people of passion.
Yeah. And it's a big family.
Yeah.
And we all kind of need this to... We all need a future here.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you know, we love it. We've worked hard to be here,
mm-hmm,
and we love being a part of it. There's not a single person here that's here, but not here because they wanted. You know, they wanted to be.
Right. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
that's,
yeah,
it. You know.
Nobody got forced to come to PRI.
No,
there's
crowds up and down the aisles, which is just huge this year.
Yeah.
You know, bigger than I've seen in years, and every one of them smiling. Everybody's, mm-hmm, enjoying themselves. They're talking to people. They're, you know, it's what we love.
For sure. So where can somebody follow along with the latest updates?
So we're just about to launch. It may have launched today yet. Arrington-hydrogen.com.
Okay.
So that'll be where the latest information is. You can follow Arrington on Twitter or on Facebook or any of those. You can follow me, Mike Copeland. I'm out there. Apologize if I can't friend you because I have 5,000. And that's all they allow you.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, famous guys like you work around that. But, you know,
yeah, famous.
I'm an old guy. So.
Yeah, you're doing far more cooler stuff than I am. So,
you know, anyway, you can follow there. And then we do our best to get the story out on social and that kind of stuff. When we run the SEMA garage, we're actually going to do video. So you'll be able to see all of that on through my social, my media. You'll see it at Arrington-hydrogen.com. You'll see it on Bosch.
I'd like to actually be up there for that.
I'll let you know if you want to come up.
All right. We'll stay in touch on that.
Yeah, I'd love to have you there.
All right. Well, listen, Mike, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for what you're doing. And thanks for taking the time to share it with us. And we'll share everything we can in support for sure.
Appreciate that. Thank you for having me on.
You got it, buddy.
It's really important.
Have a great PRI and best of luck in all of it. And we will definitely talk again sometime soon with more updates.
Well, you get up Michigan way, we get a decent day, I'll let you drive the truck.
There you go. Now we're
there's a little incentive for you.
Yeah, awesome. All right.